I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. If you live in Pennsylvania, there's an excellent chance that you have seen Tom Wolf's ads on TV. The Democratic candidate for governor used his considerable campaign war chest to introduce himself to voters early and often. He now holds a sizable lead over the other three Democratic candidates, Allison Schwartz, Rob McCord, and Kathleen McGinty. McCord recently released a racially charged ad about Wolf's ties to a former mayor of York, Pennsylvania, who faced murder charges related to a race riot that took place in 1969. The mayor was acquitted, although he did acknowledge he used to have racist views. Well, the Pennsylvania primary is on May 20th, and today on Radio Times, we talk about the race for governor incumbent Tom Corbett and some key congressional races that are also heating up, and we have two guests who have joined us. Here in our Philadelphia studio is Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY. You can read his blog Off Mic at Newsworks. He's also a contributor and fill-in host on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty.
Also with us and joining us by telephone is Stephen Medvick. He's associate professor of government at Franklin and Marshall College. And Stephen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be back. Thanks.
Stephen, if I can begin with you, would it be fair to say that Tom has become the candidate to beat? And I ask that even because Governor Corbett has been running an ad against him as well.
Oh, yeah, I think that's obvious from most of the recent polling. I mean, it should be said that, you know, there's not a lot of polling in the race, so the last poll out was over a week ago now, and races like this can be fairly dynamic, and so things could be changing kind of under the radar, but it's probably not likely given his big advantage, you know, which he got, as you mentioned, because he was up on the air so early.
Well, in fact, Dave, he had something like $10 million to spend on this ad campaign.
Right. He put $10 million of his own into the campaign, 4.3 of that, which it turns out was borrowed. But, yeah, he was up for several weeks pretty much by himself on the airwaves, you know, with some beautifully produced bio ads that kind of told him his story as a kind of socially conscious and smart businessman committed to his community, a different kind of governor. And I think it really took. You know, as Stephen said, we haven't had polling yet which reflects the negative ads, which both Allison Schwartz, the congresswoman, and State Treasurer Rob McCord have run against Wolf. So it's possible that they could be taking a toll. And I think Franklin and Marshall is going to come out with a poll next week, and maybe we'll see some movement.
Well, in fact, I want to play the TV ad from the Rob McCord campaign. I summarized it very briefly in my introduction to the show. So let's listen, and then we can talk about it.
He spent millions on TV ads. But now, serious questions Tom Wolf can't answer. Why would he chair the campaign of a man arrested for his role in a race riot, one that left a black woman dead? Why would Wolf stand by a man charged with first-degree murder, an admitted racist who handed out ammunition and shouted, "White power"? For York, Pennsylvania, it was an ugly episode. For Tom Wolf, there's just no good answer.
So, Dave, what's your assessment of that ad?
Well, it's certainly a powerful ad, and like every negative ad, it only tells part of the story. I mean, it doesn't mention the fact that the race riot it essentially deals with a relationship that Tom Wolf had in 2001, 13 years ago, with the then mayor of York running for re-election, Charlie Robertson, and Robertson's role as a police officer in a race riot 31 years before that in 1969. It seems pretty clear that at the time that Robertson was kind of a loathsome character, and a relevant question is to what extent had he changed by 2001 when he was a two-term Democratic mayor running for re-election and Wolf was the chair of his re-election campaign. Wolf says he'd worked with him on an economic development project and served as the honorary chair. The thing that Rob McCord focuses on is that as a new investigation into the events in that riot and the unsolved murder of an African-American woman, as that investigation unfolded, charges were brought against several people, including Charlie Robertson. He was a police officer at the time, was not accused of shooting the woman, but was accused of being a conspirator in that he had shouted "white power" at a rally and handed out ammunition to white gangs, encouraging them to take retribution on blacks for the murder of a white police officer the day before. As that indictment came out and he was charged with murder, Tom Wolf was asked, will you stick with him in his reelection campaign? Charlie had just won reelection to the primary, and Wolf said, if he wants me to, I will. Mm-hmm. That's the moment that McCord seizes on. He says that was a gut check moment, that you have to make an executive decision. He did not distance himself from Robertson at that point. Within days, Robertson was out of the race, and apparently Tom Wolf played a role in ushering him out. Those are sort of the facts as we know them. And it's a judgment call to what extent Tom did or didn't make the right call. But clearly the ad leaves a lot of information out and paints him, you know, like Bull Connors.
Absolutely. Stephen, I'd be curious, and just to add a couple of things, former Governor Rendell called the ad shameful. Senator Casey also critical of the ad. And I'm wondering, maybe it's too soon to tell whether you think it will hurt Wolf, or do you think it'll hurt McCord?
That's a really good question, because running ads like this is always a risk. You know, the candidate takes a gamble that there'll be backlash against them. Often, though, negative ads work, and so they probably will cut into Wolf's lead at least a little bit. I think it's important to kind of keep in context something, you know, about ads like this, especially in primaries. I mean, in general elections, the one thing voters use most often to distinguish between candidates is party, obviously. And in a primary, that's not available to them. So what they have to fall back on is either issues and ideology. And we see this playing out in many, many Republican primaries throughout the country, right? Tea Party versus the establishment. But in this race, in this particular race, there's not a huge difference in terms of issues and ideology. And there may be a candidate who's a little more liberal than the next, but, you know, basically they're in agreement. So what's left are personal traits, background, experience, character traits like honesty and trustworthiness and empathy. And so candidates have to distinguish themselves somehow. Now, you can look at this ad as sort of just a cynical ploy, you know, to push some emotionally charged buttons, or you can say, look, a candidate may really sincerely think that there's a character issue here. And if they do, I think it's incumbent upon them to bring that to the voters' attention.
Well, let me play an ad from the Tom Wolf campaign, and it features Kim Bracey. She's the current mayor of York, Pennsylvania. She's also clearly a woman and also an African American. Let's hear Tom Wolf's ad in response.
I'm Kim Bracey. As the first African American elected mayor of York, Pennsylvania, I'm outraged at the racially charged attacks against Tom Wolf. I know Tom Wolf, and here in Tom's hometown, we're solidly behind him. Tom's helped create early learning education centers and helped build a better downtown. And Tom's made sure our kids have safe places to play. We know Tom Wolf's heart. He's a person of integrity, and he'll be a governor for all of us.
So, Dave, what do you make about Tom Wolf's response to the McCord ad?
Well, he was ready with this response because this issue came up in media accounts a few months ago, and Mayor Bracey was right there beside him. I spoke to her. He had some other African-American leaders ready to stand by him. You know, I haven't seen a lot of evidence that the McCord attack has resonated among African-Americans, say, here in Philadelphia. I mean, we haven't seen ministers standing up and saying, you know, gosh, this is horrendous. We cannot elect this man. Not sure what to make of that. I think it was a real gamble for McCord. And I think if this were to come up, I kind of might have expected, if it were close, doing some radio on African-American stations in Philadelphia or mailers, to come out with a broadside like this at this point in the race when he's so far behind. I don't know. I just don't know. We'll see.
Stephen, it's interesting when you look at Tom Wolf's ads over the last couple of months. They're the sort of portraits of the candidate, of his family, of his work life. And they obviously paint a very positive picture of the candidate. But it seems that he has decided not to go negative. Does that seem like a smart move on your part?
I think it is. I mean, well, he's decided not to go negative, at least to this point.
You know, there are a couple of weeks left.
You know, and they may have internal polling that says this is really hurting, in which case they would probably be forced to go negative. What they're doing now, though, I think is smart. I mean, they're running largely positive ads about a candidate who, frankly, very few voters knew much about. If you look at the polling, and it's not real trustworthy so early in a campaign. But last fall, last winter, Wolf was barely showing up in the polls. And then when he, you know, ran so much advertising, it really put him on the map and put him well ahead, because voters, when they know nothing, if they get any information, it's usually extremely important. So he was able to kind of, you know, define himself and kind of set the tone of the race very early on. And now that he's being attacked, I think the smart thing to do with such a huge lead is to say, let's counter the charges, but we don't have to necessarily counter punch. I mean, we'll see again. You know, there's still a week and a half, and we'll see if he decides he has to go negative. But right now, I think they're playing it, you know, very smartly, and the ads are very well done.
Well, you know, let me throw another name out here. This is Allison Schwartz, and I'm looking at you, Dave, which is, you know, early on in this campaign, I think the general feeling was that Allison Schwartz would be the leading candidate. Clearly, for all the reasons we've been talking about, she is not. How do you understand how she is resonating so far with voters?
Well, you know, she bore the mantle of front runner early before the advertising season when polls essentially reflected name recognition. And she's been an active public official in this part of the state, which is the largest concentration of Democratic voters, for a long, long time. And so I think what you were seeing was name recognition, and Allison Schwartz had more than anybody else. And it's no surprise, really, given the size of this state and the number of media markets there are, in, which make it very expensive to reach voters on television, that Tom Wolf's edge in money would make a huge difference. It was actually, looking back on it, pretty predictable.
Yeah.
People have faulted Schwartz for spending too much money on staff early. They faulted her and McCord for not going up earlier on television and leaving the field to Wolf for too long. But the fact is, you know, it costs a fortune to cover seven media markets in this state with a lot of ad buys. And at least the way campaigns work these days, that's still the most effective way to move numbers and voters statewide. And it again raises the issue, I mean, of is this the way we want to be running elections? I mean, Tom Wolf says
money in ads.
Yeah, Tom Wolf says, look, I had to put a lot of money in it. It's the only way for somebody who's unknown. I haven't spent my life building a political career. I had to catch up in name recognition. He's right about that. On the other hand, Is this the kind of place we want? We have no limits on contributions in the state, and so this is what we have. If you have money, you can win.
Stephen, about a minute before our break here, but it seems, and we should say there's another candidate as well, Kathleen McGinty, but it seems that Allison Schwartz she talks about women being her base.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Pennsylvania here. How do you think that would play across or is playing across the state?
Well, I think it'll play well for you know, a fairly large segment of the Democratic electorate. The question is just whether that's enough and whether it plays in throughout the state, right? And so in some pockets, it'll be a very attractive characteristic to say, you know, it'd be nice to have the first female governor in the state. But you know, maybe it doesn't play everywhere else, and that's not necessarily because she's a woman, but it could be because there's a perception that maybe she's the most liberal candidate, and maybe some Democrats think that wouldn't be as successful in a midterm year like this year. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly why a candidate doesn't get traction. But to this point, I think Dave pointed to most of the reasons. I mean, this is more about Wolf really jumping ahead than it is any of the other candidates having particular problems.
Well, we're going to take that very short break and then get back to our conversation. That's Stephen Medvick. He's Associate Professor of Government at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Dave Davies, Senior Reporter at WHYY. You can read his blog Off Mic at Newsworks. Also a contributor and fill-in host on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. I think he does everything here at WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
People's Light and Theater presents Woody Says, The Life and Music of Woody Guthrie, May 7th through May 25th. This train is bound for glory, this land is your land. Woody Guthrie showed you can strum a revolution and do it with joy. In this event for all generations, four actor musicians play 15 instruments, perform 25 of Guthrie's songs, and celebrate the fascinating, beautiful, and sometimes tragic life of this American icon. For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts is proud to support WHYY. PAFA presents the 113th Annual Student Exhibition, featuring over 1,000 works of art by PAFA's BFA, Certificate, and MFA students. It's an opportunity to view and purchase work by the rising stars of the art world. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition is on view May 9th through June 1st. More details are available online at pafa.edu/ASE.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're getting you up to speed on the May primary. We've been talking largely about the Democrats running for governor. We're also going to be focusing on some congressional races as well. And again, talking with Dave Davies and Stephen Medvick. And lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times. Dave, if I can go back to you, and I do want to go back to Allison Schwartz, because she also has targeted, if I can say, Tom Wolf and some of his business practices. Can you summarize that for us?
Sure. I mean, she has an ad which says, you know, Tom Wolf has made the point that he ran a family business which made kind of home building products, cabinets and other things, and that he left in 2006 to become Ed Rendell's revenue secretary and basically sold the company to a group of local managers. And then after the recession, it got in trouble, and although he was under no obligation, he went back to the company, restructured it. It's now profitable, kept the jobs in Pennsylvania, and it's an inspiring story. What Allison Schwartz's ad says, not so fast. There's more to the story. If what actually happened was that when he left in 2006, he sold the company to existing managers and in order for them to pay him and his two cousins $60 million, 20 each, they took on a lot of debt. And it was that debt which made the company unviable as it entered the recession. And then Wolf comes back in, but, you know, was he really just not protecting the existing stock he still kept? You know, I think she has a point that the story he tells is one-sided. Her story is one-sided at all. I mean, her ad doesn't mention the fact that the economic recession just killed the housing industry, which the whole Wolf organization was based upon. It's true that the debt that the company took on for that buyout made it hard. You got to give Tom Wolf some credit for coming back to the company when he was under no obligation to do so, I think. You know, I think it sort of shows him to be a somewhat socially responsible businessman. The real question, I think, about Wolf, and when Allison Schwartz and I spoke the other day, we talked about this, is does even if he's a good businessman and even if he is kinder and more socially responsible than the average employer, is that what we want in a governor? Is it enough to tell us he knows how to manage in the public sector, to build the kind of political relationships that he needs to get along and get things done in a tough legislative environment in Harrisburg? You know, whatever even if the business record is good, is it enough to tell us he's going to be what we need in the governor's mansion?
And Stephen, if I can pick up on that, because some of the things I was reading about, some commentary about Tom Wolf raising questions about whether he's too nice to be governor of Pennsylvania. Have you thought about that? Is that a qualification, or does that disqualify?
It might be for some voters. I mean, you know, there people do despise the kind of negative attack, you know, politics that we have. I mean, I personally think that voters have to toughen up a little bit. You know, it's democracy, and there's a lot at stake, and that means it's going to be rough and tumble, and so they ought to, you know, get used to that. But they are turned off by it, you know, by and large. And it's part of the reason why, even though business people have a difficult time running for office, as Mitt Romney saw in 2012. You know, and part of that's because they have complicated business dealings in their past, and it's easy to kind of distort those, or it's hard to defend some of those dealings. So even though they have a difficult time, there's a lot of evidence that voters sort of like business people entering politics. And it might be a little bit counterintuitive, especially to Democratic voters. But the reason is because they think, well, you know, they're not, especially if they're independently wealthy, they're independent. I mean, they're not going to be bought by special interests. And so there's something that people like about a person who, you know, was very successful in the marketplace.
And you can make an argument that his background is sort of better suited to run against Corbett among independents mm-hmm. and moderate Democrats. And mm-hmm. he's not a Philadelphia politician. He's not right. a career politician. He's a guy who's been out there making a living in the private sector.
Right.
We should talk a bit about Kathleen McGinty. She's the other Democrat running for governor. Dave, how would you describe her as a candidate?
A lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. She's sharp and presentable and personable. Kind of just never, I think, has never had quite the firepower and money she needs. Didn't start with enough name recognition or money to kind of really get into the top tier of the race. She's made an impression in forums, and she's managed to get some advertising going. The interesting thing about McGinty, I think, is that her path to victory, if there is one, and it might be slim, is to follow the Michael Nutter course in the 2007 Democratic mayoral primary. You may remember that Michael Nutter, then there was a five-way primary. A self-funded millionaire Tom Knox takes a big lead. Then other candidates go after Knox and hit him with negative ads. And Mike Nutter kind of hangs back. He's got some money, not a lot of money. And then at the right moment, surges, just as everybody else is sick of all the bickering, runs right up the middle and wins the nomination. And that's clearly the McGinty hope. So far, not really playing out. But, you know, as Stephen said, I mean, we had a couple of weeks to go, and maybe the polling will show some light for her.
And Stephen, she has a very strong environmental background from her career and her resume as well.
She does, and she probably has a bright future, even if she doesn't win this race. So I think it's in her best interest to kind of stay above the fray, and if she loses this race, come out of it saying, "Look, I ran the kind of race that I'm proud of," and we'll be able to run again, you know, at some point in the future.
Stephen, you mentioned the fact that these four Democrats that we've been talking about, not a lot separating them on the issues, and I'm assuming the issues are things like education, energy, natural gas, fracking, taxes, jobs, economic development, and the Affordable Care Act, and I guess Medicaid, if we can throw that in as mm-hmm. well. Does that kind of cover the?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it would be hard for the average voter to say to point out differences on any of those. I mean, I think there are minor differences here and there on some of those issues, but it would be very difficult for the average voter to say, "I'm clearly for candidate X because of his or her position on," you know, issue number two. You know,
sure.
There's just not a clear distinction on any of those issues. But those are the important ones, I think.
The one exception, I suppose, is Rob McCord has actually run TV ads saying that he has proposed a 10% extraction
right.
tax on gas drilling, whereas the others are at 5. Whether mm-hmm. anyone could get 10 or right. not, I don't know. But I've actually heard a couple of folks say, you know, I like that he's taking them on and all that, you know.
Sure. We have an
email from Ryan. How do the Democratic candidates stand on marijuana laws, medical or recreational? Dave, have you, from all the forums that you've attended, has that come up?
Yeah, they dance.
They dance.
I mean, they're in favor of medical use of marijuana and decriminalization, but not legalization of small amounts in the main. But they kind of it's not something that any of them are advertising on or really championing the way John Hanger did, the other former environmental secretary who was in the race when he was there.
Stephen, I noticed that Corbett made a slight shift on medical marijuana in the last week or so. Does that tell you anything about the tea leaves that he's looking at?
It might. I mean, there are a number of Republican governors around the country who are embracing medical marijuana. I mean, there's you know, some potential for revenue there, and so, you know, I think they see this as an issue that. I mean, it's hard to know exactly where the public is on this because they're clearly kind of loosening up their opposition to legalizing marijuana. But whether voters in this state or in any state are ready to fully embrace legalization is still not clear. And so I think, you know, kind of taking a half-measured position is a cautious and wise thing to do for an elected official at this point.
And it seems that, you know, governors and legislatures looking at all the money that you can make off of, right. of marijuana. Dave, go ahead.
I was just going to remember that the people who actually vote are older than the population in general, particularly in primaries. And so I think that makes them a little bit more cautious. Corbett was facing a kind of tricky political situation in that there was a group of parents of kids who needed these that were threatening to, I think, stage a sit-in at the governor's residence until he agreed to meet with them. And I think he probably didn't need that.
Mm-hmm. And that is Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY, blogger at newsworks.org, Stephen Medvick, associate professor of government at Franklin and Marshall College, and that's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We are talking about the race for governor. The primary is May 20th. There are four Democratic candidates, Tom Corbett running for re-election. We're going to cover some other congressional races as well, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get looks like Rebecca from Kennett Square to join us. Rebecca, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Hi, I appreciate this this program because
sure.
I'm watching the primary quite closely. I'm a Democrat. I'm African-American. I'm 40. I'm a woman. And I'm watching this closely. I have to say that I did pull my name off of the email blast of Tom Wolf as soon as I heard this news. I was disappointed. It's resonated with me as an African-American. I live in a suburb of Philadelphia. I've also lived in Pittsburgh when I was in law school. And I just think that, you know, you cannot associate yourself with people who are doing, who are tied to things where there's racial injustice. I think that it is a matter of character. I don't appreciate that he then did a huge campaign media blast using Kim Bracey to act as his proxy to then, you know, plead his case that he's not a racist. I think that's, you know, that's like saying, hey, I have a friend who's African-American. I'm not a racist. I've got a friend.
Rebecca, let me ask you a question. I mean, and I don't want to get too deep in it, but I do appreciate your call because it touches on a number of issues. If the person that he supported, you know, has sort of disavowed his racist past, and we're talking about something that happened a number of years ago, does that in any way change your view of Tom Wolf as a candidate?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, I think it really goes to, that's fine. That's something that you have to take care of in your own heart and your own soul. And you can avow that to everyone else. But you really have to carry yourself with decorum and candor your whole life. So you change it, you know, because you're going to run for office. That just doesn't. That doesn't flow with me. So I definitely am looking at the other candidates more closely now. I wasn't really looking at Allison Schwartz as much, but I'm going to because she does have a lot of experience. But I'm also going to be looking at McGindy and McCord.
Okay.
Well,
I appreciate
that Wolf is a savvy business person.
Fair
that
enough. No, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Stephen, do you want to respond to her comments and...
Well, yeah, this is fascinating because it's interesting to see how these issues of character play out. Some people will see this and say it was a long time ago. You've got to cut people some breaks. It's interpersonal relationships and political relationships are complicated and difficult. And you know, maybe he stuck with the mayor a little too long, but you know, that's a judgment call. And other people will say no. This really does seem to indicate a character problem. And so you know, I know people are worried about these sorts of attacks, but I guess I think as a very well respected political scientist said many years ago, voters aren't fools, and I think they can make up their minds. In a really rational way, and even in an emotional way.
Sure.
I mean, emotion matters. But they can make judgments about candidates' characters, just like Rebecca's doing, and I think we have to trust them to do so.
Indeed. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Well, I don't have a lot to say about it, and I wouldn't try and talk Rebecca out of her point of view. I would just, and I wrote a piece on this, which if anybody's interested, then they can look at the blog off mic at newsworks.org. I think a lot depends upon to what extent Charlie Robertson had changed, what he actually did, and to what extent Tom Wolf actually really did associate with him. I mean, if he had some honorary spot, and in kind of all this stuff happened, and a reporter asked him a question he wasn't really prepared to answer, and he kind of said, "Well, I don't know. I guess." I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't like he stood up and embraced Charlie Robertson and said, "This man is a good man," and And I think what McCord's point is, once the indictment came out, once those accusations were in the air, there should have been no question. And you know, you can believe that. I just my view when I come into one of these things is I just want to know the full context of it. And there's not quite enough in the public record to to convince me one way or the other.
Rebecca,
yeah. If I could just quickly, these things are very difficult, though. And so this is in no way a defense of Tom Wolf, but I think just, and his handling of the situation. But, I think it's easy for people to make judgments about the way someone should have reacted many, many years ago in a very complicated circumstance. And I think, I guess I'm always for cutting politicians a little bit of a break. They're human beings. They sometimes make mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes are big mistakes and they reveal something really, really important about character. But sometimes they're just mistakes, or they're just maybe not quite the way somebody else would have handled it. But I think we ought to, recognize that and have some sensitivity toward the situation politicians find themselves in.
Rebecca, we appreciate the call to Radio Times, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get to Gary from Malvern to join our conversation. Hi, Gary, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I seem to be the reverse image of the previous caller.
Okay, perfect.
Because I was interested in McCord and Schwartz and looking at the broad range of care. But as soon as the dirty slurring came out, as soon as the personal attacks came out, I said, these people are the same old, same old. This is the same old politics. Can I really believe anymore anything that's said as a negative against another candidate? And this is what I'm sick of. I have utter contempt for this process. I am 70 years old. I've heard it all. I'm tired of it. So what I do, what happens, is a wall goes up. Do you really believe that all these accusations that are part of the political process can be believed face value?
Well, Gary, let me take your comment, and I'm looking at Dave. We could do a whole hour on this, but it's interesting. It's a kind of a Rorschach in many ways.
I always, because I follow this stuff and report on it, friends often ask me, who should I vote for? And one of the rules I kind of make for myself is don't watch the ads. Ignore anything you see in the ads, because this is true of the positive ads as well. I mean, it's always a one-sided story, and, we're so manipulated by images. And it's interesting that Gary says he's so put off by the negative ads, as polls show a lot of people are. But if they didn't work, people wouldn't do it. I think, we are put off by it, but the images somehow stay with you. And if they don't affect, your point of view, they affect turnout. So it's just I don't have a solution for it. But, I mean, these people are really good at manipulating us, and they're going to keep doing it.
Now, Gary, I appreciate the call. Sounds like you want to say something, Stephen. Go ahead.
Well, I
heard
do,
you
I
breathing.
Yes. Well, I just I understand Gary's position, but I guess I wonder what would he want the candidates to do. I mean, if the candidates think there's something really important that needs to be pointed out, candidates, especially frontrunners, need to be held accountable. And when there are no real issue differences or ideological differences, it boils down to personal traits, right, differences in character and things like that. And those things have to be pointed out. As Dave says, I mean, a lot of what you see in everything you see in an ad is one-sided, because when people make arguments of all sorts, it's one-sided. But we know from a lot of research that the ads you can trust the least are positive ads, because people, aren't really held accountable for those. Negative ads are actually pretty accurate. Do they leave out part of the story? Of course they do. But they know. But when you run a negative ad, you know it's going to be scrutinized. And what we find when we do analysis of these things is that, especially what we call comparative ads, ones that say, here's my position or my character trait, and here's my opponent's, those are pretty accurate statements of a candidate's perspective. And I think without them, voters wouldn't have any information. They wouldn't know what to do.
Well, we have to take another short break, and much to talk about in this hour of Radio Times. Talking about Pennsylvania politics, we've been focusing on the primary, the governor's race. The primary is May 20th for Democrats vying to take on incumbent governor Tom Corbett. We do want to talk about the congressional race, the 13th congressional district, also a very interesting race. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase offers lung screening for individuals at high risk of lung cancer based on results of a national trial which showed death from lung cancer was reduced by 20% with early detection.
Qualified candidates receive a low-dose CT scan and an appointment with an advanced practice clinician to discuss the results that same day. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, your first choice in cancer care.
This is Terry Gross. Often when I'm interviewing people on Fresh Air, they give me a different way of looking at the world.
We all thought our bike was cold in the rain, that our fish was lonely in a fishbowl, that a leaf would be afraid of heights when it fell. It's just the way we looked at things.
Join us for new ways of looking at things on Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
The latest healthcare developments.
How what happens in Washington affects you.
How world events affect us all.
The news continues throughout your day. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. We are your co-hosts for Here and Now. Breaking news, thoughtful analysis, surprising interviews in the middle of your day.
With voices from all across the country so you won't miss a thing.
That's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we've been talking with Stephen Medvick, Associate Professor of Government at Franklin and Marshall College, and Dave Davies, Senior Reporter at WHYY, blogger at newsworks.org. You can read his blog called Off Mic, and we've been focusing on the four Democratic candidates challenging Governor Tom Corbett this fall, or hoping to challenge him anyway. And I do want to talk about the 13th Congressional District. We also have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and why not send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet from Joseph, and I'll put this to you, Stephen, just really quickly, if you don't mind. Who are the third party and independent options? I'm completely disillusioned with Democrats and Republicans. This is a close primary. That's how we do primaries in this state.
That's right. And so if the voter is an independent or supports a third party candidate they're not able to participate in the Democratic or Republican Party primaries. So, and that's to strengthen, that's a view of parties that says they supporters of that party ought to have a big say in what their party does. And closed parties are designed that way to strengthen political parties.
And I guess keep out some of these third parties and third party candidates as well. Let me move on.
One quick point on that is that there are ballot questions in Philadelphia that you can vote on. Even if you're not registered to a political party, you won't be able to vote for Rob McCord or Tom Corbett. But there are some ballot questions that even if you were nonpartisan, you can vote on. So there might be there's a reason to show up anyway.
Can you do there's one ballot question in particular? What is it? Ray?
Well, yeah, this is actually a very interesting one. In Philadelphia, there has since the charter was adopted in 1951, there has been a restriction that says any office holder in Philadelphia cannot run for another office unless they first resign the position that they hold. And this is a restriction that doesn't apply to folks elsewhere or to people who hold state offices. And a lot of people feel it's really unfair. For example, in 2007, when people were running for mayor, Michael Nutter had to resign his seat, give up his income, and just figure out a way to survive while he ran for mayor, while two members of Congress, Bob Brady and Chaka Fattah, ran against him, collecting full government salaries, having their staffs produce whatever materials they wanted to use, position papers and the like. And so there was an imbalance, and I think there's a feeling that this unfairly restricts Philadelphia public servants. Now, there's another side to it. People should not be looking at other offices. They should stick to what they're doing. But voters will have a chance to decide whether or not they want to remove that restriction on May 20th.
So resign to run, those would be the words, I guess, to look for.
That's exactly
if you want to educate yourself about
right.
this.
Right.
Let me get one more caller in, and then I do want to talk about the 13th Congressional District. This is Jerry from Roxborough joining us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
So the one ad that I found, first of all, from your interview with Tom Corbett, I find him to be just an abrasive, obnoxious individual.
Well, that goes back a couple of years, yes.
Yeah, but I'll forget. I remember those things. He's got an ad that I find amusing where he's got a gas-guzzling, gigantic pickup truck versus McCord's Jeep that sputters, while at the same time he's against any kind of tax on natural gas taxing. I mean, it's almost amusing, but it's Tom Corbett. just doesn't seem to care what people think of him.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and we haven't really talked about Tom Corbett. I mean, you know, he is who he is, and you can either like him or not like him. But and Stephen, if I can toss this to you, Corbett has been called very vulnerable by even members of his own party. Do you think he's vulnerable as governor of Pennsylvania?
I do think he's vulnerable, which doesn't mean he'll lose. But, you know, and I think the race will probably tighten up as we get into the fall. But his approval rating's dangerously low. And, you know, the truth is it's never been real high. And I think some of the reason, there's lots of reasons for that. It's hard to know exactly why that's true. But I think some of the reason is you know, Jerry's call is indicative that some people find him either abrasive or at least kind of standoffish, aloof. For whatever reason, lots of voters haven't really warmed up to the governor, and lots of analysts have said he's the most vulnerable sitting incumbent in the country. So he is in some danger.
Do you think so, Dave?
Yeah, no, the polls show it, and I agree with Stephen that I think he could still win. I mean, he's going to have a lot of money, and this will be a battle. But I think he's sometimes seen as a little bit detached, and the economy hasn't been great, and the education cuts have been a big deal. The one thing that's interesting to me is the whole Penn State issue, the Sandusky investigation, and people are mad about that for completely contradictory reasons. Some people think that he stalled the investigation and endangered kids by not moving quickly on Sandusky. Other people are ticked off because he did it at all and took down Joe Pa. And I don't have a real feel for this, but people who are in closer to the central parts of the state tell me that there are Republicans who just say, I ain't going to vote for that guy because of this.
I have to put in one more caller, only because we're still talking about the Rob McCord ad focusing on Tom Wolf. We have Hill from Wallingford. Hill, go ahead very quickly if you don't mind, and then we do need to talk about the 13th Congressional District. Go ahead.
Oh, sure, Marty. I knew Tom Wolf when I was in grad school at MIT, and as it happens, I'm African American, so I'm responding to an earlier caller. And I would just characterize it the way maybe people act when they're in high school. Where do you sit in the cafeteria? And Tom sat at our table. He was not. It would be out of character from the Tom Wolf I know in grad school for the kind of intentional behavior that the McCord campaign is ascribing to him. Maybe this is weak for some people, but when I saw him, when I knew him for several years, the idea that this was a racist guy it wouldn't compute to me anyway.
Well, Hill, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And again, obviously this ad has tapped a lot of issues and a lot of passions as well. And I do want to keep saying this, but I'm actually going to do it now. We're going to talk about the 13th Congressional District. And again, Dave, only because it's kind of in our backyard here, we've got four candidates.
Right. This is the district that Allison Schwartz currently represents and is not seeking reelection to. It is part Montgomery County and part Northeast Philadelphia, about half and half. And this is, I don't know when I've seen a primary election like this where you have four candidates, all of whom are credible and have a real shot to win. There are Republicans, but it's a Democratic district. By the way, one of the Republicans, Dee Adcock, is a dead ringer for the actor Ed Harris.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so at debates you have this little Apollo 13 thing going on. It's funny.
But we are talking about Marjorie Margolis, Dan Leach.
Marjorie Margolis is the woman who held the seat 20 years ago, cast a controversial vote for Clinton's budget and then was beaten by Republicans and is coming back. She was considered the early front runner in part because she has star power. Her son is married to Chelsea Clinton, so the Clintons are on her side. She's managed to blow a lead here. I mean, she skipped early forums. And somehow her campaign has spent so much on consultants that they have little money left. I've never seen this happen. For two straight quarters, they raised a lot of money and actually spent more than they raised before they got into paid media, which is really the expensive part of a campaign. It's baffling. She's also been kind of tagged with some past positions she's taken on Social Security benefits. She says now she's not in favor of any cuts. There have been some questions raised about a nonprofit she had. I don't know that there's that much of there, but she's kind of struggling.
Well, and I should say, so that's Marjorie Margolis, right. Dalen Leach, Brendan Boyle, and Valerie Arcush. Those are the four Democrats that are duking it out to some degree. Stephen, I'm just curious, you're a little bit sort of outside of our area here. Is this a race that resonates with you at all?
It does. I mean, it's a fascinating race because, as Dave said, there are four really credible candidates here, and far less polling than in the gubernatorial primary. So we really have very little idea, you know, where the race stands at this point. So kind of blind, looking at it kind of blindly like that, I would say that, you know, the factors that tend to matter in races like this are a strong campaign organization, money, and name recognition. Yeah. And if you look at the candidates, these things are kind of spread out a little bit. I think Leach, you know, probably has a pretty strong organization since he's currently an elected official and covers the largest part of the district, I think, in terms of his constituency.
He's a Montgomery County State Senator.
Yeah, right, right. Leach has a lot of money, but so does Dr. Arkush. Marjorie Margolis has lots of name recognition. And so, you know, it's when you look at those factors, that none of those tip the balance one way or the other. So it's going to be a really close race, I think.
And Dave, talk about Brendan Boyle.
Yeah, Brendan Boyle is the only Philadelphia candidate. He's a state representative from Northeast Philadelphia. He and his brother Kevin are both in side-by-side districts in the northeast part of the city. He's a smart, kind of active, energetic guy. His campaign has been, I'm the working class guy, I'm the row house guy. His ads feature his father pushing a broom on a SEPTA platform. He's a janitor. He's proud of that.
I'm not a millionaire, right?
He insists that all of his opponents are millionaires, which isn't quite true. I won't bore you with all the details, but he is the upstart populist in this campaign. However, just yesterday, a federal super PAC started spending money in this campaign, $100,000 TV ad buy on behalf of Brendan Boyle. Super PACs, for those of you who don't wonks on this stuff, they're these, you register in Washington and say, we will spend only on independent expenditures. We will not coordinate with a candidate, but under Citizens United and other rulings, you can do that and you can take huge checks and spend whatever you want. And so this super PAC is now running ads on behalf of Brendan Boyle, beautifully shot ads which capture video that the Brendan Boyle campaign put up on YouTube 2 or 3 months ago in anticipation, in case anybody just might want to.
And that's just for the taking, right? Whatever
right,
is
that's
up
right.
there.
And this is what happens in modern campaigns. In the super PAC era, anybody who thinks there might be an independent expenditure on their behalf puts up video and says, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, but if you need some nice gauzy shots of my guy, here it is. And so that's what's happening. It's a really interesting race. We should also mention that the physician Arkush is also the beneficiary of a actually larger radio campaign funded by a physician's trade group.
And this is Radio Times here on WHYY. Stephen, are there some other congressional races that you have been looking at, or maybe even in other parts of the state that we should know about here?
Well, I think the 6th and the 8th are interesting. I mean, the 8th, currently represented by Michael Fitzpatrick, you know, it's either going to be Kevin Strauss or Shaughnessy Naughton. Both of those candidates on the Democratic side are novices. Fitzpatrick's going to have a lot of money. That should be a close race. I will see if it is. I mean, it's a midterm year. There's going to be lots of headwinds blowing against the Democrats. And so they're going to, even in races that you would otherwise say would be toss-ups, the Republicans are going to have a pretty solid advantage. And in the 6th, where Jim Gerlach is retiring, an open seat.
That's the Republican. He's a Republican.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Right, right. Another race, another district that should be a close race. We'll see. I mean, you know, again, the Democrats will have their Democrats are going to be nominating a candidate for the third time, Trivedi, and we'll see. There'll be a lot of money spent in that race. But as I said, the key thing to keep in mind here when looking at all these races, including the governor's race, is in a midterm election year, the president's party is at a severe disadvantage for a whole host of reasons. But even when a candidate looks like they may have some advantage, a Democratic candidate this year looks like they might have some advantages, they're bumping up against this sort of midterm problem that the Democrats are going to face.
Let me actually get Madeline from Wilmington, Delaware, to join our conversation. And Madeline, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. A great topic today, by
Thanks.
The way.
Thanks.
I've been trying to research on different candidates and who I want to vote for. And I was just like, I get so frustrated with the ads that I've been seeing on TV about everyone seems to want to be the average Joe. You know, like they want to, you know, oh, we're working people. We're just like you. Where it's like, in the end, I don't want someone that's just like me. I don't want someone who's just like everyone else. Like, I want someone who's exceptional. I want someone more intelligent than I am, more intelligent than the people around me. Because that's who I want running my state and my country. I don't want the average person who wants
we
that.
We hear you. No, Madeline, it's a really good point, and it's actually something I want Dave to respond. Yeah. He's got a good story.
Yeah, well, the other part of the ads, of course, Madeline, are I came from humble beginnings, but then I worked my way through Harvard. Aren't I great? I mean, but yeah, and I think, Madeline, you're right. And when I think about who to vote for, particularly like an office like mayor or governor or president, is who has real executive experience in the public sector. I mean, it's just different trying to manage in the public sector. You can't buy anything you want. There's a public procurement process. There are civil service rules. There are unions. And there's politics in everything. And so what I would ideally want is somebody who's done this at a serious level. And among the Democratic gubernatorials, none exactly fit the bill. Alison Schwartz has done a lot of stuff. It's all legislative. You know, Tom Wolf has been a businessman. He ran the revenue department under Rendell for a while. Rob McCourt has been state treasurer. That's something. And Katie McGinty ran an agency that was very active. So they all have some experience. But that's what I would look at is, you know, who's showed real leadership chops when they've had a chance.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve. In about a minute before we have to say goodbye.
Candidates find themselves in a bind because, you know, people hate politicians so much that anybody with the kind of experience that Dave's talking about is probably, to some degree, disqualified in people's minds. And so I think, you know, this blanket kind of pox on all their houses kind of attitude is cynical and I think kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think we have to cut politicians a bit of a break.
And actually, Dalen Leach addressed this at one of these forums you attended 30 seconds.
I was just thinking about this because when Valerie R. Cush said, I'm not a career politician, and that's why you should vote for me, Dalen Leach, her rival in this congressional race, said, well, you know, Ms. R. Cush is an anesthesiologist. If I were going in an operating room, I wouldn't want a career anesthesiologist. I don't want somebody who dabbled in it. He made the point that, you know, public service is a noble calling and that there are things you learn that experience does matter. I mean, there's clearly another point of view there, but it's I see both sides of that.
Well, we could go on and on and on and on. Clearly, I'm so glad that both of you joined us on Radio Times today. Stephen Medvick, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was lots of fun.
A lot of fun for us as well. Associate Professor of Government at Franklin and Marshall College, and that's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Dave Davies, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times
as
well.
Great to see you, Marty.
And Senior Reporter at WHYY. You can also read his blog off mic at the newsworks.org website. You can also go to Radio Times at WHYY.org and find out much more about this program. We have posted some photos, which will probably show up on Facebook and, gosh, maybe even Twitter. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.